Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
No intruder. It's my guest, but you're doing a great job. You really are. Good evening. Welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon. I am your host and cruise director, and armchair sociologist, Madam Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry or Jennifer Maudette Perry, Cross Pond. So tonight, shaking it up just a little bit. I've been bringing you so many interesting folks, musicians lately, authors. We've even had out-of-body experience things, and we're going to have that again coming up soon, actually. But tonight, you know, I love comedy. I love funny people. I love people that make me laugh. And this guy, our guest tonight, he makes me laugh. He's going to make you laugh, too. His name is Glenn Tickle. Glenn, come on into Madame Perry's Salon. Welcome. Sorry about the door, man.
That's all right. It's very nice to be here. I like your decorations. I grew up on watching Nick at Night, so the genie bottle feels very comfortable to me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad you like it. Just those little beaded curtains. I know it's a little 60s thing. But, yeah, find yourself a couple of nice cushions and settle in.
I actually did a show at a hookah lounge with a similar layout recently.
Okay. Well, I don't think you're going to need a safe word at this show, but I don't know if you did then, too. But it'll be just a hookah lounge. You did a show there? Really?
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
It was a good time. There's a couple of them in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I don't know why it's so popular that they have. I think there's three separate hookah lounges in Bethlehem, which seems like probably two more than they need. Like, I don't know
really
how much hookah is going on.
Well, I guess it keeps them off the streets. I don't know. So, listen, we are here to talk about tonight. You know, you've got a new album out. And just for people, if you're one of the few people that don't know Glenn Tickle yet, you're about to know him. He's about to explode on the comedy scene. When I first met him, I met you via Twitter, didn't I?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, we met on Twitter. I thought
similar,
you were so funny.
Similar social media platform. We were talking a little before. I think we've known each other online for a couple of years. I think this is the first time we're actually talking.
Yeah, so it was started with Twitter because I just thought you were so funny on there. And because also I like the fact that you also, you know, you just seem very young and hip, but you also have, you like to dress up. You're not a slob. You're not a schlub. You wear a suit.
Oh, thank you. I do so try.
Dress up and look good. And that's a thought. Oh, now that's a nice take. You know, that's sort of like the Brian Ferry of comedy, you know. Or
I feel bad for not dressing up for this now.
Are you dressed up now?
No, I'm in a t-shirt and very uncharacteristic, like gym shorts.
Oh.
Because I was cleaning my office today.
Oh, okay. I'm going to let that go this time. And also, by meeting you, I also met a friend of yours who I think is going to call in. In fact, he may be on hold right now. He's going to call in another comic and harass us or heckle us or do his best. But when I first met you, though, on Twitter and then on Facebook, I learned that you had made a film already called Several Ways to Die Trying.
I did. Yeah, my I would say last year of college, which is true, but I stayed an extra year so that I could keep using the school's equipment to make this movie. And I had an on-campus job that paid my tuition, and they changed the curriculum. So if I waited a year to put my graduation application in, I wouldn't have to take some of the gen ed classes that I had been avoiding. So when they told me that, I'm like, well, you guys already pay my tuition. Can I just stay an extra year? And they said I could. So I got an extra year of school for basically free, and then used their equipment to make a movie.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that was living the dream.
Yeah, it's on. You can get it through Netflix if you get discs. They don't have it to stream, but I think you can stream it on Amazon.
All right.
Or if you see me, you can have one. I have a lot of copies of it left.
Do you sell them at the gigs? Okay, good. Well, you know, that's what we want to do. We're going to talk about, because I thought it was very important to mention that you've already made a film, as young as you are. And I've said, like I said here, it's a cult classic that's even gaining more fans with the release of your comedy album, Glenn Tickle, Yes, Really. And so that's good to know that you can get it there. And you know what? I think we've got a caller on the line, and it's this early in the game. I hope this is a good good omen for the show. So welcome to Madame Perry Salon, caller. Come on in.
Hello?
Hello? How you doing?
I'm
you
doing
know,
well.
You sound like
hey,
you know
Glenn,
this voice.
Troy.
I do.
Troy!
How's it going, Troy?
That's going well. Just thought I'd tune in, see how you're doing.
Doing great.
I want you to know, I had no idea I could listen to the show by calling in. I was setting up my computer to try to listen in while also on the phone.
Right on. I don't.
Well,
I mean, I don't know the setup as well as Jen does, but I'm glad you can listen.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because so many people, you know, you say, you know, it's okay to call, and if you want to just stay on the phone and listen, you know, we won't bother you, and you can just join us when you feel like it. Throwing a wisecrack here and there.
Oh, no, actually, I had a question for Glenn.
Okay, good.
Sure.
So, Glenn, I know that you're, like, the best at Dr. Mario, but, like, what was it that got you into trying it and practicing it so much?
He's talking about a video game that I'm very, very good at called Dr. Mario that I'm currently chasing the world record for. I got it when it came out when I was a little kid. I think it came out in 1990 or 91. I think it was in third grade. And I just was pretty good at playing it. And then just by my personality, I like doing things that I'm good at already, and I don't like doing things I'm bad at. So since I was already pretty good at that, I just kept playing that one. And then a couple months ago, I write a lot about world records for my day job at Laughing Squid. And I was like, oh, if I was ever going to chase a world record, like what would it be and what am I really good at? I'm like, oh, Dr. Mario. I wonder if there's a Dr. Mario record. And there was, and it's just under 3 million points. And I'm like, that seems like a very beatable number. So I've been trying to do that lately. I tried to get it done before the album because I knew I'd be really busy with promoting it and doing shows and stuff, and I couldn't quite get it. I think my best score is like 2.6 million, so I'm close. But I have to get some more practice in. That's what I was doing a little bit. I took a break from cleaning my office today to play Dr. Mario. I was doing it right before this phone call, actually.
So do you think you have a target date that you can that you think you'll close in on and snatch this title?
I don't, only because it's going to take like 5 hours of sitting and playing this game to set that record. And I don't have a lot of like 5 hour windows in my life to sit and play a video game anymore. Because, I mean, it's a great problem to have because like I have my day job at Laughing Squid, which is wonderful. Comedy's picking up, so I've been very busy with that, which is great. And then I also have a wife and daughter who take up a lot of my time. So that's the other. I was really hoping to get it done before the album because I knew I have a bunch of college shows coming up starting next month where I'm going to be on the road a lot. I could conceivably bring my NES and try to do it on the road somewhere.
Yeah,
so we'll
get you one of those nice country western star type tour buses where you can lay back in a cushy bedroom and have the driver.
I got asked. The venue where we recorded the album actually asked me if I wanted to do my record attempt there on their movie theater screen, which sounded great. Like, for me, it would be a lot of fun to play on a really big screen, but can't imagine that it's the kind of thing that anybody wants to sit and watch for 5 hours. Plus, it's very hard. Like, I'm confident that I can beat the record, but I can't say, like, I'm going to beat it Thursday night at 8. So I would feel bad, like, if people came out to try to watch me beat it, and then I didn't do it. So we ended up just doing an event where I played some other comedians in the game on stage while we made fun of each other, and I went undefeated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's weird, because, like, it's such a dumb game that not a lot of people even remember, let alone care about, but I'm just so good at it. Like, it's the thing that I'm best at in life.
Well,
I think I'm a good comedian. I'm a good dad, but, like, I'm a great Dr. Mario player.
Well, you know, as an entertainment publicist, I've got to say, this is something I would encourage one of my clients to do. If you're that close to getting a world record, that would be great to put out as part of your promo and your intro.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
I got a little press about it because I have a friend who's a games journalist, and I was a little worried because, like, I don't want the guy who has the record now to find out about it and then, like, break his own record by, like, a lot. Because the only reason I started telling people I was doing it was because, like, I genuinely believe that I can break 3 million points in this game. But if this guy goes out and, like, sets the record at 5 million or whatever, then maybe I can't. So, but I've been talking about it pretty publicly for a couple of months now. So it's getting to the point where, like, I feel like people are probably sick of me talking about it until I actually have the record.
Now, do you know
where
he lives?
The first day
is he in the U.S.?
He is. I think he might be in Georgia, if I remember correctly. But my memory is very bad.
I was going to say, because according to the stats, I get a lot of my listeners are in Russia and Germany and the UK. So, you know, he's over there. He's going to know you're on his tail.
No, he's definitely somewhere in the U.S.
I'm crawling up his back.
Yeah, I'm getting close. It's just, like I said, I don't have a lot of time to sit there and carve out 5 hours to play a video game.
No, because, well, let's get to your new CD, Yes Really.
Yeah.
When did you record this and where?
I recorded it in May at the Arts Quest Center at Steel Stacks in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is, it's not really the venue that I started doing comedy in, because I've been doing comedy longer than that place has been open, but the guy who runs comedy there, Ryan Hill, has been, he used to produce some other shows in my area, and I kind of came up doing those shows, and now he's there at Steel Stacks and does a great job of trying to get local talent up with some of the bigger names that he is coming through. So I've done a lot of shows there. It's a nice big theater, so we were able to fill a 200-seat theater.
Oh, that's good.
Which I can't do that in a lot of places. but, like, there, I felt comfortable. Being able to
did
get
you feel the love. Did you feel support? The love, they were ready for you.
Yeah, we had I had a good number of people that I knew come out. Half the audience was from a high school in the Bronx that just happened to be in the area on, like, their senior trip, and they needed something to do that night. So they bought half the ticket, and we were all, they were a little worried how it was going to go with random high schoolers, but they were tremendous. I was probably the least worried. Like, I know Ryan expressed some concern. My friends, Pat and Jason, who opened for me that night, were worried about it, but I used to be a substitute teacher and, like, have dealt with a lot of high school kids. So I figured I could handle it.
Better, even better. So you were You're totally ready for that. Where was your, and you know, and I like the idea of that, Glenn, because that's people, a group of people from a different area. So when they go back home, they'll talk about you. And so when you come to town, you know, they're going to be the ones going, you got to see this guy, we saw him. You know, so that's good. Tell me, when did you start doing comedy and where?
Started in 2009, I believe, in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I live in New Jersey, but in like a very rural part where there's not a lot going on. But there was a friend of mine was going to go try an open mic, and he was really nervous about it, so he was trying to get people to come support him. So I went, and then he tried to get me to go up the same night he did, but I didn't have anything prepared. And I tried an open mic once in college and just bombed because I didn't prepare. I was just like, oh, like I'm, you know, making short funny movies all the time, I can be funny for 5 minutes. And it went very poorly. So I told him, I'm like, if you go up, like I'll put something together and I'll come back. I think it was every 2 weeks at the time. So I'm like, I'll come back in 2 weeks and then I'll do it. So I did, and it went well and I liked it. So I kept at it. Yeah. And that's, it was at the Bethlehem Brewworks, and it's a different recurring stand-up show there, but there's finally another recurring stand-up show that I do pretty regularly that a friend of mine produces there, which is nice.
Are there several in the same town or the same area?
When I started, you could get up every night within a reasonable drive, but that's not really the case anymore. It's twice a month at the Brewworks, and then there's a weekly show at an art gallery called the Alternative Gallery in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Then there's a few other random shows floating around, but I go into New York a lot more to get up because I can, you know, do 4 or 5 shows in a night rather than driving to one place to do a 10-minute set and then that sort of being my whole night.
Ah, okay. Do you see a big difference in the audiences in each place? Like it seems to have a mob mentality, but like a different how your material and your performance is perceived by people in different areas?
It depends more on like the specific venue than the area that I'm in. Where, like, I did a show at like a biker club about a week ago, and that was, I mean, they were great. Like, I had a wonderful time, but they were, I would say, like, rowdier than a typical comedy audience. Like, there were a couple people heckling and not like me directly, just because they think like, oh, that's what comedy is like. That guy has a microphone, so I get to say stuff too.
Yeah.
Where they weren't like being mean to me specifically, it was just like in their heads, like that's comedy.
So different mindset. And I asked because years ago when I was doing some stand up, I noticed that there was a lot of us. And of course, being, you know, in Atlanta, we had lots of places around that were doing open mics and stuff, or doing shows that you could try to go on the open mics. And this group I started with, you know, we didn't know one another in the beginning, but we seemed to find each other at every club. Like on Monday night, we'd be, you know, in one part of Atlanta, and Tuesday night, somewhere in Northeast Atlanta and Marietta. And almost every night, we hit a different club. And you could tell you could do the same material. You know, you could record it, do the same material in the same style, you know, and you play it back to see how you do it, how you listen to, you know, what got a laugh. And the same stuff did the same way. In one place, they would laugh and they love you and they would holler and stuff. Yeah, that's good. And then the next one, they would just look at you like you just ought to be burned at the stake. Okay. You know, sometimes it was, and we wonder if it was just the region we were in.
Yeah, there's a few bits that I have, I think, like a pretty good idea of when I should not do them. I have on the CD. He's listed as a featured performer, but I bring my daughter's toy robot with me when I travel for comedy. And I put a little computer in him, and I've written him some robot jokes, and he tells some like very punny like sciencey robot jokes. So like, I usually bring him to most shows, but when I got to that the biker club, I was like, you know what, this is probably not Mr. Toybato's audience. Like, I don't think these guys want to hear a binary code knock knock joke. So he stayed in the bag, and I just
is he with us here tonight on the show, or is he?
No, he's currently disassembled. He got booked for a show in West Virginia that I have to do next week. God, that's close. Where a tech school in West Virginia wants me to come talk about my joke robot. They don't necessarily want like a show. They don't want me to do jokes. I'm doing like a presentation on how I made my daughter's plush toy robot tell jokes.
Well, you want to get some good press off of that. Get some good YouTube.
Yeah, I was working on it today because the original plan and what I do on stage are very different. Because on stage, the easiest thing for me to do is just put a little Bluetooth speaker inside of him and play tracks off my phone. Because I can really work like the timing of it that way. But my original plan was there's this very tiny computer board called the chip that I was writing about for work, and it was like the whole thing was they wanted to make a $7 computer so that people can like make projects and learn coding, and it seemed like a noble effort. I had $7, so like I backed the Kickstarter thing, and then months later I'd forgotten about it and it just showed up in the mail. I'm like, what am I going to do with this thing? And it is just about the right size to fit in my daughter's toy robot. So I'm like, oh, I should make like, cause she has other toys that talk, and I'm like, oh, I'll just make like robot lines and I'll just plug them in and do that. And, I don't know what I'm doing with any of this. So like it got
pioneer.
Very complicated very quickly. Yeah. And I figured it out. Like, I got it working, but then the voice for the program that I based it off of terrified my daughter. She hated it. So I had to, like, find a better, less frightening-sounding robot voice. So I just used one of the ones built into the Mac operating system and then just used that to make the tracks.
And she doesn't mind you taking the robot on the road? I mean, that's her toy.
No, I have to ask her. I have to ask her now. I've been doing it for as long as she's been alive. One of the first shows, she's 3 and a half now.
Oh.
And I had a show, like, she was maybe a month old. I had to go do a week of shows in Nebraska with my friend Pat Jansen. So I brought him with me. And I was just, like, taking pictures of him doing stuff at the airport. And it wasn't until, like, a year ago that I did any of the stuff with this little computer to make him tell jokes. I always just brought him on the road and he would like sit in my hotel room so I didn't get lonely. But I was doing a showcase for college kids and I was showcasing on the last day. So for like 2 days at this hotel conference center, like all these 19, 20 year old kids were watching me walk around with a little toy robot, like taking pictures of him doing stuff. So I figured I should address it. Like when I'm on stage in front of all of them, I'm like, oh, this is why you've seen me for 2 days playing with a robot in the lobby. And then from there, I put the computer in them. And the thing I'm trying to do now is write an artificial intelligence program where he can write his own knock knock jokes. And that's super above my head. Like I have no idea what I'm doing with that.
All right. Okay. Remind me next time I interview you to do it from the offices up there at Georgia Tech, that little trade school we have in Atlanta up on North Avenue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's,
so
it works.
Somebody could translate for me.
It spits out mostly gibberish. Like, I'm trying to teach them specifically knock-knock jokes because they're very structured. And the type of program that I'm using handles that very well. Somebody fed a similar program, like they they had the text from all of Shakespeare's plays. Mm-hmm. They fed it to this robot, and then now that robot can write a Shakespeare play. It's not good. It doesn't make any sense. But if you look at it, it looks like a Shakespeare play.
Yeah.
Like it has the formatting, like character names are in capital letters, and then there's a colon, and then there's the lines, and then there's act and scene headings. So I'm like, oh, I'll do that, but with knock-knock jokes. Those are very structured.
Oh, okay.
He knows, yeah, he knows it has to, it's knock-knock, who's there, and then a word, and then it's after that, it's just gibberish. But
okay.
we're getting there.
Well, now, that sounds kind of, like you said, the robot voices, you said some of them frightened your daughter, but I'm going to say, I understand your daughter can be pretty frightening, too.
Yeah, a good chunk of the album.
Tell us about that.
And my set in general is just how I'm afraid of my three-year-old daughter. She also makes an appearance on the album. She got up on stage and told a knock-knock joke, which was a lot of fun. I was a little afraid of how that would go because, I mean, you can hand a three-year-old a microphone in front of 200 people and ask them to tell a joke, but who knows what they're actually going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was comparing it to, it's like making a wish from a genie. Like, you have to be very specific and aware that there could be consequences you're not ready for. But I have a cute kid, so if she didn't tell the joke and I just brought her out on stage and she did something else, it would have gotten a laugh. But I made a video as a backup to put on the album in case it didn't work. But
good. That's good. Well, because I did want to do, I've got the CD, your album, Yes, Really, and it's hilarious. And no matter how many times I watch the videos or play it over and over, I still laugh. But I thought, I could play the cut, but I'd rather you tell us about the terrifying child.
Sure.
What makes you, what's scary,
there's a lot.
You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about?
There's so many, but I think I do. So when my daughter was 4 months old, she had a tongue tie, which is the thing that connects your tongue to the bottom of your mouth. It stuck out too far and it was causing problems with breastfeeding and everything. So she had to have surgery to get it fixed. But I got woken up in the middle of the night by my daughter crying, and I go in to check on her and she's got blood all over her face, and I panic because that's what you do. But then I remember, I'm like, oh, it's just cause she just had the surgery done. It's not a big deal. So I remember it all. My daughter's still crying. I'm like, it's the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. A little bloody baby. And I go to pick her up.
Ooh.
And I get her up out of the crib. As soon as I pick her up, she stops crying, but then she starts laughing. I'm like, no, that's much scarier. Don't do that. But a crying bloody child is frightening, sure, but one that's laughing at you is just downright unsettling. And I'm like, I had to start panicking all over again.
All over again. So tell me, what is it? Now, you said you worked as a substitute teacher and you worked with high school or little young kids too. They must have a wonderful time with the name Mr. Tickle.
Yeah, that's where the album title comes from, because it's not a joke. Like, Tickle's my real last name. I've had it my whole life. It goes back hundreds of years as a family name. But usually it's the third or fourth thing I have to say to people is yes, really, because when I meet them and tell them my name, no one thinks it's real. And as a sub, every morning I would have to write that on the board in front of a different group of little kids. And it's every morning I'd have to brace myself because I could tell depending on what grade I was subbing for that day, what jokes I was going to get, just because I remember from life. I remember what stupid jokes people made about my name in first grade. I remember what stupid jokes they made in middle school. And I did it long enough where students got to know me by the time I was done. I worked almost every day at one of the schools in the district. So it wasn't as novel my fifth year teaching as it was my first. I don't know if I did it that long. I have a very bad concept of my own timeline. But I did it for like a good, it was probably 4 or 5 years. So by the time I was done, unless I was going to the preschool or something where it was new kids, or maybe the beginning of the year, they had all gotten used to it. My older brother is a math teacher now, in a high school. So I'm sure school, I think, just started for him last week. So I know what he putting that name up on the board first day of school.
Does it ever cause you any kind of problems though with the name? I mean, do people?
I had a couple of times, like, bookers have not had like checks ready for me at the end of shows because they're like, oh, we can't write it out to a stage name. We need your real name. And I'm like, oh no, I'm a real person. Please pay me.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I talk about it on the album. I was,
I think
this was shortly after I stopped substitute teaching, but like I taught in the district where I live. So like, I know a lot of the kids, but I don't know their parents. Cause like subs don't do parent teacher conferences. Like I know a lot of, I know a lot of school age children, but not their parents. And like, it's really novel for kids to see their teachers outside of school. And I was just walking down the aisle of a store one day and a little kid was getting pushed in the cart by his dad, who looked like he would have been at that biker club I did a show at. And the kid just starts screaming my name. He's like, Mr. Tickle, I've missed you. And then this huge, like, burly biker looking guy is just eyeing me up, like, suspiciously. And I had to explain to him, like, oh, it's fine. I have a dumb name. I was your kid science teacher for a while. Please don't hit me. That story turned into a joke, but it was very real. That is a true story of how I almost got beat up in a Walmart.
and that is a funny, and it is, and folks, this is a funny comedy album, and you just trust me, it's funny, you get it. And I think that's so sad that, you know, you had to wait on a check, because let me tell you, a few years back, well, more than just a few years, I worked for a while as a professional celebrity impersonator, and I mostly did Marilyn Monroe, and then then the agent said, well, most Monroes also do Madonna, so I did Madonna. I did Dolly Parton once, but it was killed my back, so I didn't do that again. But I did a lot of Monroe and Madonna. And, you know, you do it for these big conventions, like I did for the openings of Hard Rock Cafe and Planet Hollywood, when they had some kind of big parties and stuff, like to launch certain drinks or different conventions for businesses or... And I remember there were a couple of times when if it was through an agency, then agencies that booked me, they would always have, you know, my check in mind because the client paid them me. But there were some times when the clients just wrote the check out to Marilyn Monroe. And then I'd put it in my little purse. Thank you ever so. I've got to get back to the Kennedy compound now. And then they used like a professional. There were a lot of Elvis impersonators in Atlanta, and all Elvi are not created equal. So they, I guess I said, oh, there's Elvis Presley. Between the two of us, Flintstone Vitamin's not safe in here. So then they'd write me my little check, and I'd go, and I put my purse and leave, and then I'd get there and go, Marilyn Monroe, dang it, now how am I going to cash this? But I would just sign the back, and people, they never looked. They just put it in the bank, so.
I have a couple of friends who use stage names, but they're not like, a lot of people think Glenn Tickle is a stage name because I'm a comedian. I'm trying to be funny, but they just have just regular sounding stage names for whatever reasons. Like, I know some of them used to be teachers and those careers overlapped. Like, they started doing comedy while they were still teachers. And, so they would use a stage name that wasn't their real name to kind of throw off students and parents or whatever from finding out. I never did that only because I didn't care about my teaching career. Like, that's not what I wanted to do, so I was never that worried about it.
This tickle.
But that can be a problem too, because like sometimes people think my name is a stage name, but for my friends, like people don't realize necessarily that it's a stage name. So they've had the opposite problem where like somebody will write them a check to their stage name and they have to get it filled out in their real name. I think you can just like register with your bank, like just tell them that you're doing business under Marilyn Monroe or whatever name you use, and then it's fine. I always just do everything in my real name.
As long as the money's going into the bank, they don't care. They just kind of like,
yeah,
whatever.
They're probably a lot
less
worried about.
All they want to do is just get it done and then go on break and smoke weed behind the Kroger where the bank is or something. So they don't care. But, you know, guess what? We got a couple of callers calling in. One is my BFF, Kenya Colbert. Kilbert, Kenya.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Hi.
Mr. Tickle.
How are you?
I'm tickled. Sorry, I could not resist.
I get it a lot. I forgive you.
I love your name. I absolutely love it. I just love it. It's a fun name.
I've gotten used to it. I've not always loved it, but.
Aww. Well, it makes people smile because tickles make you smile.
That's true.
So
yeah, I mean, I've had it for
33
years.
I started smiling. So. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I've had it for 33 years, so I've gotten used to it. It was tough because the Tickle Me Elmo doll came out going into my freshman year of high school, which was like the worst time.
Uh-oh, and I remember some of the jokes about Tickle Me Elmo, so I know you didn't want to hear those over again. Oh, my God.
No.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, listen, what also tickles me sometimes is when I have a sponsor and we have some of the best. I have the very best ones of anybody, the very best. And they're always people. My sponsors are always people that are about helping. Like recently I had somebody that created an ergonomic pillow, the Zen pillow, and somebody creating a vacation place in Panama where Kenya's parents are. And last week was a website for a dating service for petite, big, beautiful women. And but then, you know, Kenya works a lot. Kenya's on the road. She's pretty busy. Glenn, I know if you're traveling, you know, your wife is busy. She's got the baby to take care of. She's got you to take care of. And, you know, you want to shop. You don't have time. My friend has an online mall with all kinds of stuff. And I am going to bring him. He knows his way in Madame Perry Salon. He's been here before. Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing there, Jennifer?
Good, good. Thank you so much for being here and for calling in and telling us. Tell us about the Bard, and that's B-A-R-R-E-D, not Bard like
right.
Shakespeare, the Bard Mall. Did I describe
it
correctly?
Yes, the Bard Mall, anything goes. That means basically it's a mall that, you know, of course you have your apparel store and your beauty salon and your clothing store. It's got over 20 plus stores, but when you go on there, you know, you click on, say, your clothing store, and you go and look at the products aren't like, hey, a hat or a T-shirt. It's the actual companies. We have now just reached 750 businesses, and these are from, like, the small mom-and-pop shops to the Fortune 500 companies and all that, and since the guy, Glenn, is your featured guest for tonight. You know, he was talking about the Dr. Mario, and I imagine he's a bit of a geek fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
got a store called The Geek Store. Basically, you click on there, and it shows a bunch of, well, stuff that a geek would buy, you know, but it's mostly like collectibles and stuff like that, like your Star Wars or Star Trek and stuff like that. And then, you know, Madam Perry just posted something on her Facebook page that it's our weekly discounts and stuff like that. And one of the stores is actually, I think it's, I'm on my website now looking this stuff up. But it's called a Apparel Zoo. It's on our apparel store, and they have Pokemon T-shirts for men for an affordable price for under $15 because, well, the Pokemon goes pretty big nowadays.
Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah, I play that one a lot.
Yeah, it's got a lot of things. I mean, we got an arcade where it's basically free games, stuff you can play there. If you are a person who has a deep pocket, a deep wallet, we have a casino where you can place bets and all that kind of stuff. We just received, we just got 30 companies on our smoke shop that are vape companies, you know, different companies that way, electronics store up to gift shop, you name it, we got it. And
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but when you said, oh no, I apologize, Uma, but when you say arcade and games, that's my girlfriend Kenya here.
Right.
Yeah.
That's Kenya's forte.
You just go click on the arcade and it shows you different ones. I mean, I don't know how much you guys follow politics, but I actually have a game on my arcade. It's called Stop Trump. And you think it's, you know, oh my God, he's going to bash him and all that. No, they actually, there's many different, if it's Obama or it's Bush, or it doesn't matter who's running or whatever. Basically, they got games concerning them, and it's basically Donald Trump trying to sneak into the UK, and the Queen of England tries to stop him. You know, he gets in there with a fake passport. You know, you got to try to pin this stuff out. I mean, we got 750 of these different companies on there. You know, if you're a person looking for love, you know, there's a love store. You know, maybe you're looking for a great bottle of wine. We got something called the lounge. You know, it's just, we got everything on here. I mean, we got a toy store, you know, travel if you need airfare, you know. We got two professional football teams that are going through us, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs and the Chicago Bears, you know.
Wow.
And we keep adding on every single day. A jewelry store, human resources, if you're trying to go online and try to get an education, you go on there, and it shows different kinds of stores. You know, if you're trying to get the taxes or the proper things you need to start a business, you can go on the human resources. You know, we got pretty much anything. And then that's the funny thing is, you know, I'm sitting here working on this, but I'm also working on another website. It's called Railbird Express Games, and it's basically, I got so many arcade games coming in, I got so many casino games coming in, I'm basically going to combine both of them, but it's going to be separate on the same website, so people, you know, kids can play the arcades, but, you know, the people who want to place bets and all that, because one of the biggest things in this country that generates a lot of money is fantasy sports, fantasy football, baseball.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a multi-billion dollar company, and you know, of course I want in on that action. But
sounds,
you know,
good.
I tell you what, you know, when you said, well, I always love listening to your programs, Jennifer, and
oh,
one thing,
thank you.
And when I seen Comedian, I'm like, oh, I got to jump in on this. And then the more Glenn talked, it was like, oh, Dr. Mario. Wow. All of a sudden,
it's my greatest skill.
I don't know if you heard that. Kenya, do you play Dr. Mario?
I do not. I don't know it, but I want to play it now.
It's not even that fun of a game. Like, it's just that the only reason I like playing it so much is that I'm good at it. Like, it's not
–
the biggest challenge is, like, it's kind of boring after a while. Like, if you've been playing for 3 hours, like, it gets kind of tiring because it's just – it's a little bit like Tetris in that you're stacking things that fall down.
Gotcha.
But
okay.
You're trying to get rid of – there's viruses in a pill jar, and you're trying to get rid of them. Instead of Tetris, which is you're trying to build and destroy a tower at the same time. Tetris doesn't make any sense to me.
All right. Well, listen, I tell you what, since Kenya, I'm so glad you're here. Larry, if you're going to thank you so much for listening and for calling in. I'm going to have the Bard Mall folks on. I've got it on my page, but I'm going to put it on the Madam Perry's Salon page on Facebook.
Jennifer, when you have a moment after your program's done, message me, okay?
Okay, I will. Listen, we only got about 15 minutes left, so do you want to stick around so that Glenn can have an audience so we can all laugh at him and make him feel like he's in a small private club?
That's fine. That's fine.
All right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. All right. Glenn.
Yeah.
You're on.
I'm here.
Give us the feel. Give us the club experience.
Wow.
Give it to us. We're here. We're high.
Oh,
we're
just,
ready to laugh.
Just straight jokes
really.
Over the phone. All right. This
yeah,
is
straight jokes.
Not the weirdest show I've done.
there's always that one
weirdest...
that just puts you over.
Yeah. What's the strangest thing that's ever happened to you on a gig or during a show?
Strangest. I did a show outdoors during the Allentown Fair, which is like a big regional fair, but it was like at 3 o'clock in the afternoon outdoors on like a farm stage, and the audience wasn't there for the show. They were just there because they wanted to get there early because there was a dog act on at 4, so they were just waiting for us to stop telling them jokes. Yeah, they were just like trained dogs. So as we're doing the show, like, the dogs start showing up, and they have their little area off to the right where all the obstacles and stuff are set up, so they're in there. So it got to the point where, like, even most of the comics are just watching. Like, they'll be on stage telling a joke but looking at dogs trying to go through a hoop or whatever. luckily, I got up before the dogs came out, but that was probably the weirdest.
Hey, have you ever... I know you got a good story about somebody heckling you at a club.
Oh yeah, that's my my big vengeance closer. I went out on the album on this because I've been doing this bit for a long time and I really love it. But I got heckled a while ago, and I was doing a show. It was at the venue where we recorded the album. It was the first year it opened during a big festival we have up here called Music Fest, where it was the last thing of the night after all the other shows, after everybody's been out drinking in the sun all day. They're like, hey, come watch comedy. So they pile these people in, and it was in the biggest venue at this place. So there was maybe 300 people. And the guy just starts calling stuff out, but he's so far back, I can't even hear him. So I just make some, I can't hear what he's saying. I can just tell he's being disruptive. So I make a comment about him being drunk, finish my set, and I get off stage. And it's a showcase. So there was me, and then there's probably like 4 or 5 comics after me. So I get off stage, and I probably would have never thought about this guy again, but I looked at my phone, and I had like 30 updates on Facebook, and they're from that guy. Like, he found me on Facebook to keep heckling me during a show that I was now no longer a part of. like, he had friends of his jump in on it. So it was the weirdest thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and, like, I admire his dedication, but that makes him the dumbest heckler because Facebook works both ways. At the beginning of this story, he was just a guy in the back of the room, but now he's Dan Huff. Like, he sent me all of his information on Facebook. So what I've been doing is, for years now, I film audiences yelling, "Screw you, Dan Huff, we love Glenn Tickle," to end my sets. And when I started doing it, I would send them to him directly on Facebook. But he's long since blocked me, because obviously, of course he would. But he let me do it like 2 or 3 times before he actually blocked me. And I don't know if that's just because he doesn't check his Facebook frequently, but like I got 2 or 3 videos in before he blocked me.
See, he'll be trying to friend you as you get more famous, you know.
I put an ad up about the album recording show on Facebook, and I think one of his friends commented on it because I couldn't I didn't have any mutual friends with this person. Their comment was like vague but not particularly supportive. I don't remember what she said, but I was looking and then I was trying to go back and see, but I think I deleted all their comments from when they were heckling me, which I kind of regret. But I'm a sensitive little boy, so I just deleted them so I didn't have to have my feelings hurt. But yeah, this has been that's my way of getting revenge. And I have
good
comedian friends who, like, they're like, you got to stop doing that. I'm like, why? And they're like, because that happened 5 years ago and you're an adult man. Let it go.
You're an adult man. Never an adult man.
It's so much fun. Plus, like, it's on a very practical level, I think it's good because it I have to say my name again so it helps people remember it. And then I'm also making them scream that they love me, which feels wonderful, but also like then it puts it in their head that they do in fact love me.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's
it's
right.
Also,
you know, we could name all the psychologists that would tell you that. That's the way to do it. That's it.
I'm with you.
If you ever get a chance to get a room full of people to scream that they love you, definitely do it. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, I'll see what I can do.
I think I've only done this on the album, but I had a magician friend make a suggestion for it because I usually film it and then I put it up on my Facebook page so people who are at the show can watch it. But he suggested that I make everybody stand up and give me a standing ovation while it's going on. I'm like, oh, that's, yeah, of course I'll do that. And I did it at the album. But the other shows I've had since haven't been as well attended. And for that bit to work on stage, there sort of has to be a certain number of people in the room. And also, they have to be on my side already. Like, it's hard to do that in like a short 5 minute set somewhere. But if I'm like, I, you know, at my album recording, everybody watched me for an hour. Because if everyone's not into it, if everyone is just sort of being polite, then it's more sad than anything. If you have like eight people just like going through the motions, then it's not fun. Then it's just pathetic.
But
so that's another one.
It looks good on camera, though. It looks good on camera.
It looks good when there's 200
audio.
On. Yeah.
Well, 200. Yeah.
So
hey,
you're
that's another
with...
one where I'll only do situationally.
Hey, Glenn.
Yeah.
What you should do is take the.
Larry, did I lose you?
He got
cut
off.
Yeah, I'm still
here. And this is
okay.
This
now
is
he's back.
Yeah, you got cut off after saying what I need to do, and then it was silence.
Well, I tell you
was
what.
Was that your suggestion?
About my suggestion should be to you is do it where you're actually like, you know, act like you're playing Dr. Mario and have the robot stand next to you and actually criticize your, you know how you're playing and stuff like that. And you're basically having an argument with the robot. Hey, you know, you know, you're not real. Well, I can tell you're, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Some
We've
people,
done,
you know. It's almost
sketches.
Like that Jeff Dunham kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Feels like more like Twilight Zone there.
Yeah, I've done some sketches with him online. I have a friend who is much smarter and better at computer programming than me who wrote a bot that can play the game Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
And Dr. Mario is a much, much more simple game where I'm like, I should teach Mr. Toivado to be able to play it. Because nobody, like, I will win whoever I play against. Like, it's not, that was the problem. We did a stage show where I played other comedians in this game, but it wasn't even close. Like, no one had a chance. So I'm like, if I teach a robot to be unbeatable at this game, then it will be fun for me. So that might be my next Mr. Toy Bottle project. Yeah, but we've done some fun sketch stuff together. One of the album promos, because I typically work clean, so I the premise of the sketch was that I installed a language filter on him so that he couldn't curse either. And every time he tried, he just made a modem sound. So it was just him making modem sound at me after a while.
That's good. Well, you know, Glenn, you've got the CD is doing real well. You know, I posted up some video from it on Facebook and also on Madame Perry Salon. And your sounds like it's doing so well now. You're getting a lot of calls. You're going on tour. You're going to be traveling. Where are you going to be soon? You got a lot of private gigs, public gigs?
Yeah, in September and October, I'm going to be doing a lot of college shows. And I think it depends on the school. Like, it's mostly in the Northeast, but I know some of the schools, it's like a closed-off private thing. And I think some of them are open to the public. So I'm going to have all those dates up on my site soon. I keep meaning to update it, but I have to get all the contracts and stuff finalized before I add dates. But I'm going to be basically all over Pennsylvania and New York State in September and October. And then after that, hopefully other places. And then I think the only other – I have a show at Broadway Comedy Club in New York City on September 17th. Yeah, and that's
when are you gonna come down south?
Whenever you'll have me. I did a show in North Carolina last summer. I think that's the only. Oh no, I did a show in Tennessee a couple years ago while I was on a tour of whiskey distilleries. So that was a lot of fun.
On a tour of whiskey distilleries. Well, okay, good. You gotta support the local economy there. That's good. Hey,
yeah, basically that's
how
you get me to go to any show is you just give me whiskey.
Okay, this is what we need to know to get you down here. Now, until they have an actual comedy club on the Bard Mall, then Kenya and I will work with this, like at the Laughing Skull in Atlanta and Funny Farm at the Punchline. And, by the way, we need to holler at somebody who didn't call in, but they were – that's just another funny person I've met through you, Mike Gall. So,
yeah, Mike Gall's great. He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, Mike Gall, we love you. It's funny, wish you call. And he's going to be on here soon. And by the way, before I forget, coming up soon on Madame Perry Salon, next week, guess what we're going to do?
What?
What?
Charades.
I'm glad you asked. What'd you say, drink?
No, charades.
Oh, charades? Oh, God. Okay, Luis Monero, I think he's a doctor or something like that. He is a doctor. His publicist got a hold of me. He teaches people how to have out-of-body experiences. So we're going to be on the air and all floating around and visiting each other.
So drinking. And,
what? So,
yeah, I think
so
if you drink enough, that's what happens, right?
Yeah.
Drinking,
yeah.
Right?
So we're going to learn how to have an out-of-body experience, what to do, you know. So, yeah, wait, you know, think of what you could do with that. You could go check on people, see what's going on. All right. And also, then the next week we've got, on Tuesday night, I've got, it's going to be about steampunk crafting. I've got the guy who is steampunk Boba Fett and Lord and Lady Towers, and they're going to talk about how a lot of creating costumes and some of the leather and hardware stuff that they've got going on. Then we have
steampunk Boba Fett. I wonder if it's the same guy.
Strange way.
I don't know. I didn't. I just saw a steampunk Boba Fett costume at a Comic Con I was at.
I wonder if it was the same guy. I posted him on Facebook. Big elaborate costume. He is the guy. He is the guy. Name is John Strangeway, and he's also the steampunk Boba Fett. And so they're going to be on talking about, steampunk work. They got Wild Wild West Convention coming up next year. And Madame Perry might be there as a panelist if they.
Wow. You know.
Yeah. Well, my buddy out there is pushing it, so we'll see. We'll see what's going on. And also Holly Overton, who wrote a book called Baby Doll. And she's a TV writer. And actually her father was part of a notorious kind of outlaw gang, bank robbers or something a few years back. But she has a book called Baby Doll, and it's about a woman who's kidnapped when she's in high school, and then 10 years later she escapes. So that'll be good. And Glenn.
Yes.
Come on down to Atlanta. Kenya and I will take very good care of you.
Yes, we will.
No harm will come to thee. Your friend Mike Gall told me you were a little apprehensive about coming to the South, but
I'm apprehensive about leaving my house in any
I understand. In this world, sometimes.
If there was some,
we have a lot of Southern hospitality here.
Yes, we do. Tell us what comedian, what other comedian touring would you like to tour with? If you could be an opener for anybody out there right now, who would it be? Or who would you like to be on the road with?
If we're going anybody, Steve Martin.
I love Steve Martin.
He did a stand up set pretty recently, but he doesn't really do it anymore. He tours with Steep Canyon Rangers, is the bluegrass band that he tours with, and Edie Brickell. But yeah, I would do 10 minutes up front of that show. I would I don't get nervous going up on stage, but I think that would be a lot of pressure. As far as like more who are working comics today, I really like Josh Gondelman.
Oh, nice.
He released a CD a couple months ago called Physical Whisper. That is just a delight. Shane Moss is another guy that I really like. John Hodgman.
Okay.
Hosts the Judge John Hodgman podcast, which is also very, very fun to listen to.
So you like Steve Martin. Let me tell you, a long time ago, there was a place in Atlanta called the Great Southeast Music Hall, and about once or twice a year, Steve Martin would come through, and he would do a show, would be double bill with, I don't know if you've heard of Martin Mull.
Yeah.
Okay. And they did a show together. It was the Steve Martin Mull Review, and you weren't around then. You weren't even a Hershey bar in your daddy's back pocket then. Okay, it was that long ago. So, Glenn, you still with me? And
yeah.
It was great because Martin Mull did mostly his music, his funny songs, and Steve Martin. And then I think there was one show that I missed, but apparently he got everybody to leave the place. And King, this place was over around Lindbergh, over in that area. Near Lenox, Piedmont, Lindbergh, and he got everybody to leave the club and go march down to a 7-Eleven and buy out all the Slim Jims and stuff. So that we let the whole pack down there. So yeah. Glenn Tickle, we're gonna look for you on the road. What is your website called? What's your website,
you
girl?
Me or?
I'm talking Glenn Tickle.
GlennTickle.com. Yeah, you just go to GlennTickle.com.
Mr. Tickle, that's what I'd call it. Mr. Tickle.
It's weird. I've gotten billed as Mr. Tickle a few times. I did a show at Ramapo College last summer, and on the poster, it just said Mr. Tickle, and that makes it sound even more like a bad stage name. But yeah, you just go to GlennTickle.com or any social media site. Type my name. There's two other Glenn Tickles that I know about in the world, but I think I have them beat on all the other social media platforms. And you can get the album at glenntickle.bandcamp.com, where I set the digital version is Name Your Price, so you can grab it for free if you would like, or you could be cool and pay for it, but that's entirely up to you. And that's
you
also, I think right now, the only place you can order the physical CD. It'll be available a few other places soon, but right now it's the only place you can get a signed copy.
All right, and so
if you would like that,
would love a signed copy. No, so everything on Glenn Tickle is on. I'll have it on his site, glenntickle.com. You can find him pretty easily on social media. I've got him on the page here. And by the way, if you're listening to now and you've never clicked follow, please click follow and follow us here so I can keep getting more cool guests like Glenn Tickle and more cool sponsors like Boomer Bromley in the Bard Mall. And so my girlfriend Kenya can keep coming on here with me and have a good time. Also want to say thanks to Troy. I love you, Kenya. Troy, who called in. And also to Mike Gall, who better be listening. And hope you'll go get the CD. Yes, really. Get the film, Several Ways to Die Trying. Or dry tying.
I record a podcast with Roy, who called in earlier, called Dice to Meet You. that comes out every other week that people can find. That's a lot of fun.
Okay, so we'll send them all to that too. And also then check out the Bard Mall to do some shopping and some playing around. I am Madam Perry. I thank each and every one of you for being here. And we're going to have some more comics coming soon too, some more comics. And I am really psyched about that. One of them, I think, is – have you heard of Killy Dwyer?
Yeah, I know that name.
You have? Okay, yeah, Killy Dwyer's coming and a few others. So thanks again for being here, Madam Perry Salon. I love you all, and be good to each other.